This is the third of four public hearings. Well, it's actually a continuation of the third. I think we've already announced all this. What we are doing at this point is we are carrying over from our work from our hearing. When was our hearing? Oh, Monday night's hearing. And the focus here is on the on Central, and we have people who were signed up to testify from last time. So we are. Are these in order, Dr. Tolliver? Are they? Okay. Mr. Erskine was first on the sheet. Mr. Erskine. As he said to go ahead without him, would you like to? I actually don't know because I had a different sheet that had different names.
Go.
If you could state your name and address for the record.
Yes, my name is William Erskine. I'm with the law firm of Offutt Kerman. Address is 8171 Maple Lawn Boulevard, Suite 200 in Maple Lawn, Maryland, 20759.
And we've got Mr. Fox here. Go ahead.
You only missed my name and address.
Great. Okay, go ahead.
Yes, I'm here to speak on behalf of Amendment Number 46002. We refer to it as Maple Lawn South. As you may know, it consists of 91.25 acres. We are proposing that it be zoned RA15, and the reason for this is that RA15 is the only zoning district that permits three separate types of housing products, which would be multifamily townhouses and single families. Single-family detached. We think this is important because it will permit the developer to provide an appropriate transition between the existing established single-family homes on Murphy Road and the heavy institutional uses and commercial uses that exist on the north side of 216 as part of the Maple Lawn development. Significantly, this property is within the PSA, was brought in during the last amendment to the general plan. It is also, unlike other additions to the general plan, it is within what has been designated as the growth and revitalization area. The other two properties that were brought in during the last amendment are in the established communities area of the general plan. Now, why RA15 as opposed to some lesser less intense or less dense development? Well, there's a number of reasons. Just to tick through it very quickly, this property, unlike other properties with it recently added to the PSA, is within 1 mile of the county's largest private employer, that being the Applied Physics Lab at Johns Hopkins. This site is directly opposite and within walking distance to four existing public schools. It is also within walking distance of three established places of worship. It is also within walking distance of nearly 200,000 square feet of retail and commercial uses, including the Harris Teeter, grocery store, CVS, drugstore, and numerous restaurants. Significantly, the property is within walking distance of 1.7 million square feet of existing and programmed employment space, including Class A office space. Perhaps most significantly, the property is located near existing major road infrastructure, including Maryland Route 216, Route 32, I-95, and 295. And equally as important is that it's within walking distance of an existing commuter bus station, less than 1,500 feet from the site. So for those reasons, we think RA15 is the most appropriate zoning for the property. Significantly, and you'll hear from our next witness, an environmental scientist by the name of Eileen Strawn, development of the property as proposed will reduce the pollutants that flow to the reservoir and then to the bay by at least 50%. And I won't steal her thunder. I'll let her speak to that. Thank you very much.
Questions for Mr. Erskine?
Yeah, plenty of them. First of all, how close is it to the reservoir? Yeah, you left that out.
I believe it's about 2,500 feet.
Okay, I think that to the edge of the property is 2,500 feet, and to the watershed itself, the defined watershed.
I don't know that. I just looked at it on Google Earth. It looked like it was about 2,500 feet to the The southernmost portion of the property was 2,500 feet to the closest inlet that I could see on Google Earth.
Okay. But the inlet's not the watershed. So do you have the distance to the watershed?
I don't.
Can you please get that for me?
The next witness will have all that information.
Okay. And then the next question, how long have you been working, you and any of your clients been working on the development of this property? First of all, in general.
My earliest involvement was, I don't know if it was like, was I saw a letter the other day where I had written to Ms. McLaughlin requesting that the property be considered for the general plan. At that time, I was not working for Maple Lawn Farm Incorporated, although Mr. Yeager is a personal friend of mine, so knowing what Plan Maryland had called for, I spoke to Mr. Yeager about it, and he told me I could make that request, but I was not engaged to do
when,
so.
When was that?
It's on the date of that letter.
I have no idea. Do I have that letter? Maybe I have it in the testimony.
I saw it in the presentation of okay. The video presentation.
Okay. I'll find it. At what point did this level of development begin being discussed with the county?
With the county?
With anybody in the county, with government or elected officials.
I don't know that a level of development was discussed, to my knowledge, until we submitted an application for the rezoning. So, like that, and that was done, I think, on the last day, December 14th.
So there was no discussions prior to December 14th with DPZ or any other elected official regarding our government official?
I can't remember the exact dates, Mr. Fox.
Okay. You as you said, you represent Mr. Yeager as well. Just out of curiosity, this is not on that property, but on the Maple Lawn main property and the turkey farm. What is the current plan now for the turkey farm, which was the old farm district?
I didn't represent the Yeager or Maple Lawn or Stuart Greenebaum.
I understand, but I understand you represent Mr. Yeager though at this point. And is that, I would have thought you may have been involved in any of the legal decisions they would have made on that property as far as what they're doing, as far as any sort of trust or anything else like that?
Well, I was not involved.
You're not, so you don't know what those plans are?
No, I think it was part of the Maple Lawn.
Originally.
Originally,
asking,
it was a part of the plan.
Now.
Yeah.
You don't know?
I don't know what
okay.
the plan is, though.
Right. I may have some other additional questions as we move on, but I'm good for now.
Dr. Ball.
How far away did you say it was for the commuter bus?
1,500 feet, scaled by Google Earth.
And you said one of the rationales was that it allowed the three type of family uses?
The concept plan that's been proposed, and you can see it on the screen, the area in the upper right-hand corner of the property where it looks kind of brown and tan, that's actually a circular parcel that belongs to Howard County, and it's a water tower. The distance from that water tower to the commuter bus station is 1,500 feet, as I scaled it on Google Earth. The idea was to have the more dense housing product, which would be the multifamily, nearest and closest to the commuter station, because it's generally viewed that they might utilize it more than some of the occupants of other types of housing. So there's also a terrain advantage. It drops off steeply from the road. So as you go from the water tower down deeper into the property, it actually drops by about 40 feet in elevation. So it sort of soaks up, from an architectural point of view, the heights of the buildings. So it just seemed like a very nice place to pocket that. Also, that area is very close to existing large-scale institutional uses. The Grace Church there is a very, very large institutional religious facility that directly adjoins the property in that area. So that's where the proposal was to have the apartments. And as you can see, it's directly across the street from the Harris Teeter shopping center. Grocery store, and it's again within walking distance of 1.7 million square feet of office And although it's a long walk, it's within a walking distance of the applied physics lab, probably a better bike ride than a walk, but it's a mile away. As you move towards the center of the property, where you see the existing home in the center, that's proposed to be an area of transitioning density to townhouse development along the central part. And again, that rises up on a ridge. That's the high point where the farmhouse is. So with the townhouses developed there, it's our belief that properties that are further to the west along the Murphy Road property really would not have a visible line of sight of the this is a high point right here. So this ridge, once developed with townhouses, will provide at least breaking up the skyline here so that apartment structures, which are depressed about 40 feet below the elevation of the road, would be...
Now, you mentioned you had reached out to Mr. Yeager when you saw Plan Maryland.
Yes.
We heard from several community members concerned about this proposal reference Plan Howard. Could you talk about briefly why you think Plan Maryland might have made you reach out to Mr. Yeager versus why community members might be thinking when they look at Plan Howard, this might not be compatible?
Yes, I can. The when I saw Plan Howard, and I followed it very closely, and if you remember, it went through several iterations. The Maryland Department of Planning came out with a first edition, then a revision, and then a final draft. And that process probably took 7, 8, maybe 9 months to occur. But one of the common themes that was coming along was it was the first time that teeth were going to be put into smart growth. Smart growth is a term that's been floated and bandied around really for about 35 years since Paris Glendening first thought about it. The idea of having compact, walkable development with, you know, avoiding urban sprawl. But there was really no teeth. So local decision makers, bodies such as yourself, you know, they were encouraged to engage in smart growth, but there was no consequences for it. There was no teeth to it. Plan Maryland, it became very clear to me, was the first time that the state was going to impose teeth in this requirement and really for the first time start to require smart growth. And so they were talking about things. Originally, the term was growth print area, and I think we now ended up with different tiers and area growth and revitalization areas. If you notice, in Plan Howard, we do not have any areas that are planned for future expansions of the water and sewer district. So in my mind, I had to look at this property, which is so strategically located, and think, what is the best use of this property, not just now, not just 5 years from now, but potentially in perpetuity? And should it forever remain outside of the PSA? And my thought was that to develop it outside of the PSA on septic is exactly, it directly contravenes Plan Maryland. So I think that what people are seeing in Plan Howard, and they're kind of latching onto this, you know, this one page, I think it's page 73, is an area that said that the new additions to the PSA should be, first of all, it was a recital that was being done for environmental purposes, and as you will hear from Ms. Strawn, our environmental scientist, the development that is being proposed will reduce by 50% the pollution, the nutrients that are currently flowing into the reservoir. It will reduce it by 50%.
But why not just stick with RRDEO?
Because the RA15 is even less polluting than the RRDEO. Estate development on single-family lots, they don't have an ability to share impervious surfaces. So as you get into more compact development, believe it or not, the most ideal way to develop this property would be 100% apartments. That's not being proposed, even though that's being circulated by members of the opposition, that there's a proposal for 1,400 apartments here. It's never been the proposal.
I think you're one of your clients, the owner, has threatened the community with that.
I don't know about that.
I can affirm that.
Okay. I didn't hear that.
Actually, it was a little bit worse than that.
Okay.
But I won't go there right now.
I don't have any information about
that.
But that actually is the most environmentally sensitive way to develop this property, 100% multifamily dwellings. The reason being is that multifamily, they all share impervious surfaces. When you live under a four-story apartment building, your roof is shared and it serves four apartments below it. So you have all this shared area of impervious surface, and it greatly enhances the environment. But what many of the protestants are arguing is that 73 called for a transition from existing zoning to have an appropriate transition. And the way we read it, and I guess what the council meant by it, you'll each have to. I don't know what you meant subjectively, other than I think Mr. Fox, who's shared his points of view with me very clearly, as well as
on the video of a few of us discussing it.
Yeah, well, the transition that we believed and still do believe that the general plan calls for is single family housing up against single family detached housing, and that's exactly what we are proposing. Significantly, we're not bringing any of the intense institutional uses that are on the north side of 216. We're not proposing that any of that come south because we don't think that'd be an appropriate transition.
We're going to have some more time at the work session. I don't want you to. I was just asking about why not RRDEO, and I think you've answered.
It's not as environmentally
based upon
friendly.
Your perspective.
I know we'll have some time at the work session, but I think right now, since based off our schedule, I don't think we plan on doing much of one after.
Just one other thing. The other thing is, not only is RRDEO or even RED, it's not as environmentally sensitive, but that's only one factor to really look at. The other thing is you can't achieve with RR or RED any kind of residential density that could take advantage of the commuter transit. You'll never achieve transit densities, and frankly, I think that's just a position that we either have to agree on or disagree on. Some folks that we've talked with just really don't share that goal of ever achieving transit densities. Be very happy, frankly, if that commuter bus station did not even exist.
Ms. Straza.
Ms. Watson.
I would just like to suggest that we have people that have been waiting and from the previous night and might want to testify and move out of here, and so I would just like us to show some courtesy to them and get them up here
I
so that they don't have to sit through a long question and answer between the two of you.
I'll agree,
either the work session or you can bring him back.
That's
up
what
at
I was
going to
say. If we can bring him back up to the end prior to the work session.
I definitely will be here.
Yes.
I'm fine bringing him back up after other folks.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. I'll reserve on even the other. If your other folks are testifying as part of the group are going to be in order now, I'll just make my notes and wait until we get through the other text amendments.
That'd be fine. Although I don't know that Ms. Strawn will be here for the work session, so if you have questions of Ms. Strawn, you might want to do that.
Would she be able to stay this evening at the end of the...
She indicates yes.
Then I'm fine. I can wait. Or does it make sense to even have them at the end and have the other text amendment folks come up now and not put off Maple on?
I think the people that are here to testify from the other night ought to be heard first.
That's what I'm saying.
Let's do it then.
So, but that includes Maple on, but I'm just suggesting grouping the Maple on stuff towards the end. It's not going to be that many, and that way we can keep all that discussion.
I don't think it's that many people total. So
that's
what
I'm saying.
Yeah. I think Mr. Raza just work it.
I was just going to read down them if you want to.
If they can defer, then that'd be great.
If they would like to, they can, but I'm going to just go in this order.
I'm good with that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
I have Edward LaFamina.
I'm a resident in the Skaggsville community. And I am speaking with regards to Amendment 46.002, for which I strongly favor.
Okay, can you just state your name and address for the record?
I'm sorry. I'm Ted LaFamina, or Edward, 11058 Harding Road, Skaggsville, Maryland. I came on Monday night and heard an endless series of drivel from my fellow neighbors, and I don't think they understand the positive impacts of high-density housing right across the street from our schools. Did you know that just a few more minutes of driving in heavy traffic releases stress hormones into the bloodstream that can lead to heart disease? Living within our community, there are numerous cardiologists and other health professionals that are running their practices in other, more congested counties. This amendment is the kind of positive action that will entice them to move their practices into this county. There are other professional services that would benefit from RA-15 as well. The increased traffic congestion, crime, taxes, and overpaved open spaces are all known to increase anger and frustration, which will be a boon to our county's divorce attorneys, therapists, and child abuse clinicians. It would be hard to think of a more effective way to grow this type of professional service revenue. I've also heard many complaints about how paving that farm will hurt the reservoir. Perhaps my neighbors don't know this, but we don't drink that water. Do you know who does? It's the people south of us in Washington suburbs. These are the people creating our national debt. I say let them just drink our hydrocarbons. I have a younger sister that went to high school in an area of high-density apartments. She was groped in the school hallways regularly, but the school administration had bigger problems to deal with. She's now a PG County cop, and she would tell you that the experience gave her the kind of guts and street cred to handle the gang-infested neighborhoods of Suitland. Everyone knows that our teachers are overpaid in Howard County, and it's time they start earning that pay by getting the focus on discipline instead of academics and productions of Singing in the Rain. The RA-15 project will force this kind of needed change. Our local police officers do way too much traffic enforcement. It's high time that we spawn the kind of action that will keep them on their toes. Over the past few years, there have been numerous studies that show that rental units and high-density housing will grow crime exponentially. I, for one, would like to see them just flat out too busy to be handing speeding tickets out on Route 29. Reservoir's Coach Rogers has recruited well over 50 kids onto the various school running teams, and he has them running all over the neighborhood. We find it incredibly annoying to have to stop for them at every crosswalk. A few sexual assaults will help put a damper on this nuisance. Did you know that rental properties and high-density housing creates a sense of anonymity that encourages sexual predators? So again, thank you for bringing this to our school district. In conclusion, Mr. Fox, I urge you to put your name on this proposal and stand with me saying it's time for our overpaid teachers to earn that pay, time for our kids to get a taste of a harder world, time for us to get our money's worth out of that police academy training, and time to tell those environmentalists that they can just drink our carcinogens. Amendment 4602 deserves to pass. After all, the developers have paid good money for it. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? Okay, thank you. Steve Brownlee? Is there Steve Brownlee?
I just want to ask for a copy of that testimony, if you wouldn't mind sending it to us. Thank you.
Andy Sun. Okay, good evening. If you could state your name and address for the record.
Yes, good evening. My name is Andy Sun. I'm a resident of Howard County since 1988, and I reside currently at 6243 Heather Glen Way, Clarksville, Maryland. Today I'd like to just testify in support of the originally proposed DPZ amendment to the zoning regulations, and also in full support of amendment number 15 proposed by Ms. Karen Wong, one of the our neighbors in our area. As you know, the issue of setting up a mortuary, a commercial size scale mortuary in an environmentally sensitive area, has been a major controversy in the past several years, plaguing this community, creating an outburst among many residents. People are very frustrated. And to start with, we are not opposing a mortuary. We recognize the need for its value, the service. What we have problem with is the fact that it's been placed on well and septic. And under the current regulatory requirements, there has been a number of compliance issues involved. And yet, by having the current setting of a 3-acre minimum acreage, it is just too small to accommodate a huge scale. In fact, if you look at the drawing and the comparative chart, which I believe some of our people have already testified and submitted to your reference, you will find the disproportionate structure being proposed. I'm not here to talk about the particular case, but I'm talking about that why the need to have a very balanced approach. And the comprehensive zoning process may be the best time for this council to really take a good look at this issue and help hopefully find a proper balance. Otherwise, we are into probably a downward spiral, which will further deteriorate the trust between the people living in this county and this very county government. And I beg you to take a closer look at it. And on a procedural matter, I want to address. And that is, we've been hearing some voices regarding the fact that, arguing at least, that because there is a pending case, therefore, the council cannot take any action. Or, if the council should take any action that touch on this very issue, this particular case need to be exempt from whatever decision made by this council or, quote unquote, be grandfathered in. And I'd like to address that very quickly. In this state, first of all, the United States Supreme Court in 1898 already established a doctrine called the Vested Right Doctrine. And in that doctrine, the court made it very clear, and I quote, I thought I got 5 minutes already.
Are you speaking on behalf of a group?
Yes.
What group is that?
That's the Commonwealth for Clarksville Communities.
Okay.
The court said it's not within the power of a legislature to take away rights which have been once vested by a judgment. Legislation may act on subsequent proceeding, and I emphasize, may abate actions pending, among other things. And ever since that, more than 30 states adopted this doctrine, with Maryland being the leader of that. And in this state, at least our Court of Appeals already made it very, very clear in a case called Prince George's County versus Sunrise Development Limited Partnership. And the court made it very clear, in order to have something exempt or to be even considered grandfathered, you have to have vested right. And that's the key word. And today, for a case that is still pending, there is nothing being vested yet, and therefore nothing to be exempt or grandfathering about. And therefore, because otherwise, if you look at it, think conversely, if anytime anybody have any issue, and knowing that the council might take some action, I can just go to the court, file a case, would I be able to just stop the council from taking any further action? And that would not be possible. That would make our entire system dysfunctional. And therefore, I beg your attention to this very well-established principle. And in conclusion, very quickly, I would like to just say that once again, first of all, the Planning Board's decision not to adopt the original DPZ proposal to amend the existing zoning regulation, consider funeral homes and or mortuaries, on the only ground that there is a pending case, is ill-advised. Second, the pending case has stirred up huge outbursts in this community and can easily turn into a major firestorm if not handled carefully and properly. Thousands of people have already spoken and signed up. And we are here not to oppose the service of mortuary, but we're asking that it be placed on a proper location, not in a well and septic zone, in a rural residential area. There is no need to set such a precedent in this county and an entire state as such.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, I have Richard Lestrani. Is Richard Lestrani here? Francisco Ward? Peter Lee. John Taylor. That's pretty much all I have here. Is there somebody else who had signed up to testify? Did you sign up to testify on this?
No, but I understood yesterday or 2 days ago, if you didn't sign up, you could testify if you came in later.
No, what we said was that you needed to testify, you needed to sign up on that date.
All right, so we can come back on Monday then. Okay.
What are you?
I wanted to testify on the text amendments, and I think Dan here wants to testify on the text amendments.
I signed up on the internet, and there's a record of it.
Okay, well, come on up. That's fine. You will. Okay.
Or I'll come back Monday. I don't care.
Well, I'll be back.
I mean, if that's what we've got, we've... Okay, come on up. That's fine. Oh, I'm sorry. I do have... Okay, we'll go ahead and we'll see if you... there are three people here. Thank you.
All right, that's good.
Dan, you are for... I apologize. I did not... Go ahead.
That's okay. As long as we got it clear. But before we start, just a matter of notice on these things. I follow these things very closely. There was never a list of the specific amendments on the internet until about a week ago. Before that, there was a description of the area, the central area, Fulton area, and category number 4 says all the properties outside the planned service area. All of Highland is outside the planned service area. All of these other areas. So it's ambiguous. So I signed up to speak today about the amendments that were supposed to have been on Wednesday, and I intend to be back on Monday to speak about text amendments that require to the west, which is what the subject of Monday's meeting. So I thank you. I get two bites at the apple here. I'm going to concentrate on amendments 4001 through 4007. Those are the Highland amendments. They're map amendments.
Oh, are you speaking on behalf of the Highland Association?
Yes, I am speaking on behalf of the Highland Association. I'm sorry. Thank you. And actually, the Highland Association, in meetings, various meetings with DPZ, we actually supported a modified BRX for Highland, as opposed to these various map amendments. As it turned out, we got a mix. We got a hybrid. We got some amendments supported by DPZ and some amendments that are opposed by DPZ. Well, that's the world. Let's deal with it the way it is. And I intend to come back and speak about the BRX and the text amendments on Monday. But concentrating on these four specific map amendments, 4004, 05, and 07, those are all on the northeast side of the crossroads next to the Gray Pony. And that actually includes the Gray Pony lot, if for those familiar with Highland. Well, we support DPZ's rejection of those. There's no need for any more commercial space in Highland. We already still have vacant commercial space in the Highland Crossroads all across the way. So we're with DPZ on 04, 05, and 07. 4001. This is a site that involves an existing case, but it's a different case. It's a case that has been decided. This is the property where there was a Board of Appeals decision that opposed the nursing home there. We have fought this at great expense and time, money, and my energy for 3 years. Now, this is nothing more than an attempt to go around an existing Board of Appeals decision that is still under judicial review. If you grant this, you completely undermine the existing conditional use process and all the citizens' input and all of the work that's gone on both sides of this thing. This is not the place to settle that. It's in the courts. And I would think that Mr. Sun just gave so somewhat of a vested right if a decision has been made, I believe. All right, 4002. This is the lot that's down on the southwest side next to the old bank, Smita's Pharmacy, that area there. This lot is adjacent to a lot that was created as a B1 lot in the last go-round. This lot is only about 15% B1. 85% RRDEO. In fact, it should have been converted to entirely to RRDEO in the last round. And there's no conceivable reason to support entirely B1 on a lot that's only 15%. If you want to cure the split zoning, cure it. Make it all rural residential. 4003 is the lot that involves the beauty parlor. We have a different solution for this. We think that this, if you grant the cure the split zoning on the commercial lot next to it, then that could possibly be a BRX. But if there's any one of these that you should grant, maybe this is the one, because this is a local business. It's a woman who's been there for years. She's just trying to expand a little bit, and I'd like to see her do that. I just don't know whether this is the right mechanism to do this. We thought maybe the BRX was a better mechanism. So, and finally, we'd like to join with the people who oppose 34001-004, and also that's the HUDnet property. Also like to oppose 46-002, which is the Maple Lawn property. But I'm going to oppose it for different reasons than they are. I don't want to get into the nuts and bolts that Mr. Erskine and all the rest of them are so good at. This should never, the PSA, I don't think was, I think it was improperly expanded under the general plan. Even if it was a legal process, and we can point to some testimony about it, it was a terrible public policy and procedure. There was very, very little notice. It was done by map amendment that no one could read. I had to get on my computer and blow it up to 1,000% to see if I could do that. I finally extracted a document that listed the properties that were included in this PSA expansion, by the way, of 900 acres. This is not the way to expand the PSA. So what I'm going to respectfully suggest to the council is that you reverse yourselves, that you remove these PSA expansion from the GP and take this up, the whole issue up at a later date when you can have proper public airing of the thing. Let's go back and let's do this thing all over and do it from the PSA point of view first, and then we'll discuss the zoning. But you must realize now that what you have done by expanding the PSA is allowing these proposals to come forward. And maybe you didn't understand the consequences of your actions at that time. I ask you respectfully to reverse it. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank
Any
you
questions?
Very, thank you very much. Questions? Okay. Thank you. I also have on here Michael Sparrow. Michael Sparrow. I called earlier just to check, see. I called Steve Brownlee, Richard Lestrani, Francisco Ward, Peter Lee, and John Taylor. Are any of those folks here? Okay. Are you one of those folks? Come on up. Okay, if you could state your name and address for the record.
It's John Taylor, 6528 Prestwick Drive, Highland. I am here for text that's separate from the Maple Lawn Farms, correct? Okay, all right. I was actually involved in this way back when this parcel was zoned R. The whole area was zoned R, one house every 3 acres, rural conservation. And I have in my bag the zoning case that originally wanted to put clustering where Maple Lawn Farms is, and it was turned down as being out of character with the rural conservation zone. Then, of course, that was a big battle, and the reason I'm bringing it up at this late date, it was 20 years ago when this room was configured a little differently and it was packed to the gills with people who were fighting it, and eventually Maple Lawn Farms got through and got built, and it turned out to be a fairly nice development. But part of the understanding, at least that the community had when that was done, was that was it. And in fact, it's supposed to transition to single-family detached housing over where the highs and the little shopping center is in the big curve there. This was never supposed to sort of grow and get bigger. It was supposed to be what it is, and that was it. That's not to say there was never to be any more growth, but as the gentleman before me said, the planned service area, it used to be sacrosanct. You almost never expanded the planned service area, and nowadays That seems to happen almost casually, and that's kind of disturbing because the county has a long-term plan for the no-plan service area remaining that way and being primarily a rural conservation area. I think the other and the sleeper topic on this is really the road network. And this all came up 20 years ago. This road network is not configured for the level of development that is already planned for Maple Lawn Farms as it sits, without adding another whole gaggle of apartments and whatever else is called for. In Maryland, even across the country, you know that infrastructure and funding is the big buzz, and the lack of it, and that's usually the case. There isn't the money to come in, tear out the traffic circles, which were a bad idea to begin with, but they're here. Now, I might, as a quick aside, a community that has more experience with traffic circles, Cape Cod, up in New England. I had to go up there on business. And what they call them rotaries up there. And what they found out was they're dangerous. When they're not dangerous now in Fulton because you haven't got the level of development. Maple Lawn Farms isn't finished yet. As you build that community out, let alone add to it, you're going to have to go back and do something with the rotaries because they're going to become dangerous. You're going to have an escalating number. They had fatalities up at Cape Cod. Anyway, the bottom line to that is the road network isn't made to handle this. The community was, you know, went along with Maple Lawn Farms on the assumption that that was pretty much it. I'm amazed we're even sitting here discussing this. I hope you'll turn it down. And I second what the earlier gentleman said about being more careful about amending the planned service area and backing this out. It doesn't belong in the planned service area. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions? Mr. Fox?
I think she was up first.
Mr. Taylor, nice to see you again. And
to you.
I was wondering, I remember your involvement in the case prior, and I was wondering if you had any recollection of whether or not sort of the statements about the future of the area, whether they were made in the decision and order, or I know you have a lot of documentation from the time back then, but would you give that some thought as mm-hmm. if you know where exactly we could find sort of that discussion, in, because as you know, there were 32 hearings and so on and so forth.
Sat through every one, practically.
If you find that, will you let me know?
I will do that, Ms. Watson. Thank you. And my recollection is the best place to find that is most likely, and this is going to be quite a slog, I'll certainly try to do it, in the transcripted testimony from 32 hearings. I don't think the decision and order, I don't even know if legally in a decision and order you can say, this is it, we're not going to go after more.
It might be in the final vote tape.
That would be interesting.
I'll be willing to share these with you. I just got them printed out, so both of those.
Did you have them transcribed?
Huh? The DNO, so I at least have that part of it.
Is there anything in there?
We just got it.
So maybe we could have someone listen to the last voting session for us.
That's an excellent idea.
Yeah, and you know, one of the things I think, you know, and you're alluding to it as far as that transition, the whole thing was a negotiation as far as the transition. And if I remember correctly, and it was on their website up until about 2 weeks ago after I brought it up, it's now gone. but I did print it out on the Maple Lawn website, the old map, which had the old town, it was called the Old Farm District, and it was 32 homes on about the same amount of property that they're talking about across the street. It was in the planned service area. It was 90 acres or so, somewhere between 80 and 100. It looks like about the same size. Mm-hmm. With 32 homes in the planned service area, that was supposed to provide the buffer between the rural area and the property. Now what's being discussed is not developing that property and then going across further into the rural area and closer to the reservoir and putting up to 2,250 homes, and because of the way that the RA-15 is currently written, but even at RA-15, if that provision is removed, is still 1,365. And I'd like to remind Mr. Erskine and everybody else that as we make our decisions, it can't be based off of what might go there, but what can go there.
Thank you. That's a very key point.
Okay, other questions? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
So my understanding is there's others that were signed up to testify that we don't have. Okay. No.
Would you clarify?
Okay, Susan. Okay. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. Michael Sparrow. Is Michael Sparrow here?
They have to have signed up.
Okay, well.
Unless we can.
All right. How many folks are here who want to testify? Because here's the thing. We're going to have remainder days anyway, so if we've got time and there's folks here and others can testify.
Have you heard from everybody that has signed up? That's my concern.
Everyone that I have written down here, but my understanding is there are others who say they have signed up.
Everybody who has signed up has already testified?
So if Ms. Gray would like to, is that?
That was here. That was here.
What is the question?
The question is, does anybody here testify?
Who hasn't testified that wants to testify?
Yeah, if I could see a show of hands from a time management standpoint.
You're allowed to testify if you haven't signed up.
Sign up by the 17th.
We were told that we couldn't speak if we hadn't signed up by last night.
Right.
True. That is what we say.
Yes.
So everyone speaking today has signed up.
Signed up previously. On Monday.
On Monday the 17th.
Right. If they weren't signed up, they weren't allowed to speak today.
Right. That's what we said. That's exactly what we said.
Exactly.
That's what we said. So we want to try to be consistent, and I'm going to leave it up to council body. I mean, we want to be consistent.
You guys
had said
something, and you guys are also having a different discussion. So I'm happy to hear from you.
What?
I know the microphone's on.
Yeah.
We're having a discussion.
I mean, it's five people.
Here's the problem. We have some people in the audience who want us to stick to what we said, and we have some people in the audience who don't want us to stick to what we said.
If we sign up, can we come back Monday then?
Yeah, that's a different hearing altogether. That's open to whoever on Monday night, correct?
The West.
Yes, the West, but that's the intention. But there's nothing that precludes anybody from, especially with we anticipated with the summer vacations that people could come on a different night.
Us that didn't sign up because we were told they weren't allowed to speak.
We did say that.
By the 17th
at
night.
Willing to speak.
My initial inclination is to let people speak. However, we were very clear that they would not be able to, so some people may not have come who might have wanted to testify.
And that's my concern, too, only because there's concerns about it on the other side.
They might have brought other people had they known. There could be rebuttal to testify.
To testify, that's exactly
they
right.
They bring other people at a later
Monday. Yep,
but I think it's a little different.
They're
I think that's
here
the point.
To hear it,
they're not right, exactly.
Aren't we being taped? They were here. I mean, if you want to do it that way, I'm just saying
I'm just
could have a long evening on Monday. And
I hear you. I'm just concerned
people.
Process-wise. There's been a lot of concerns, especially over this property, regarding pretty much every process,
right,
including the posting and the notification. So
I think we stick to what we said.
I do. And the question would then be, at the end of the hearing on Monday, will we allow additional testimony on this case and additional sign-up?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So then I guess the question is, if we're going to let folks testify anyway.
Because if they had known that they could testify tonight, they might have brought specific people to be here.
Yep.
Okay.
And I think we need to try to keep a level playing field.
Yep.
I agree.
Yep.
Okay. Do we have others who believe they have signed up? You think?
I personally signed this card.
Do we have record of it? We don't have any record.
Can we look in our sign-up?
We don't have any record.
What's her name?
When do you think you signed her up?
We have the list from Monday night. She's on there.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I don't have. You have my list,
Mr. Wimberly.
Yep.
She's absolutely on there.
Yep. It's on there.
Well, this is.
I saw it. I just. That's not a list that I received, does it?
Wait a minute. What? Okay. Are there more people on that list? Because I'm not sure we've seen that list.
Right.
That's the sign up list.
I thought that someone was allowed to speak for 5 minutes if they were covering the whole amendment by themselves, but then other people couldn't come.
No, it's five. If you're representing a group, it is five. But that doesn't preclude other people from testifying for three minutes.
Yeah, because we couldn't let because we were all testifying after number three. And so we didn't realize
sorry, I can't
that
hear
one
it.
Person
is
the white paper.
It's a little convoluted, especially as well as definition of group, which is another thing that's convoluted as well. So I would agree. It's, we were talking about that as related to something else. But it's 2 minutes, and there's going to be plenty of other opportunities for additional discussion.
Thank you. You could just give these to somebody. You don't have to.
Broken, sprained, or but the ankle itself or the bone?
These four people are not on my list that I have, so we must not have gotten the final list after everything was over. So, Jen, you have on this list who signed up last before we left, after Stephen Brown, Eileen Strong.
Yeah, if you're here and if you thought you testified for us to double check on the list, there was a couple of other we have a
signed up.
A sign up list that yeah.
We got a here. I don't understand what here I'm supposed to be looking at since these are a lot of sheets that we have.
It's all right. We just whoever's here that signed up.
There's the ones that signed up at the
not
end.
Not that many people in the audience.
Yeah.
If you're here and you signed up before,
let us know.
Who signed up to testify?
So I think Eileen Strawn.
Eileen Strawn is next.
Oh, this is the list from today. We didn't even have it at the beginning, did we? Is this? Yeah, this is it. This is all we have.
Yeah.
I think. You think there's more?
We think there's more.
You think there's other people here to testify?
See if there's.
Well, I mean, is anybody raising their hand saying they signed up?
Is there anybody else who signed up and did not testify and is here today? Okay.
Because we see a lot of other people sitting out there that we haven't seen testify, and we're just want to make sure if they're just maybe here to watch and listen, and that's fine.
Okay.
All right.
Let's go.
Hey, if you could state your name and address for the record, and then.
My name is Eileen Strawn. I reside at 15526 Thompson Road in Silver Spring, Maryland. Strawn was asked to, my company, Strawn Environmental, was asked to evaluate the non-point source pollution loading for various land use scenarios for the 91-acre parcel proposed for the Maple Lawn South development. We used the MDE non-point source pollution model, the model that developed county, that was developed by MDE for the counties to evaluate various land use scenarios for the water resource element of the comprehensive plan, as required by House Bill 1141. We calculated pollution loading, non-point source pollution loads for four scenarios: the existing agricultural use and single-family residence on septic, residential use based on the existing residential estate zoning with one dwelling unit on 3 acres on septic, residential land use based on the residential environmental development zoning, one dwelling unit on 6,000 square feet connected to water and sewer, and residential use based on the R15 zoning according to the current plan for Maple Lawn South connected to water and sewer. We found in our analysis, using the MDE model, significant reduction in pollution with land use change from the agricultural use to the residential use. We also found a reduction in pollutant loading as density increased. It's not hard to understand the reduction that accompanies conversion from agriculture to residential. That's easy. We're not applying fertilizers or poultry waste as a nutrient to cultivate a crop. It may be a little bit more difficult to understand the reduction that is accompanied by an increase in density. There's a couple of reasons why this is the case. Mr. Erskine articulated one of them, and as there's the issue of shared impervious surfaces, so shared drives, shared roadways, shared rooftops. But the other reality about development is has to do with the pervious area of a large lot residential, and that's that it's covered, the pervious area is grass, and grass, particularly maintained turf, contributes significant nutrients. It in and of itself is a crop. In fact, the Chesapeake Stormwater Network in 2010 determined that evaluating the entire watershed of the Chesapeake Bay, which is a 64,000 square mile watershed, that the dominant crop cultivated in the watershed is maintained turf, and that 75% of that crop is in residential lawns. Howard County is ranked third in the jurisdictions in the entire Bay watershed for the amount of maintained turf, 41%, exceeded only by Fairfax County and Montgomery County. And turf is known, and I have studies that I can provide as backup to that, that from EPA and from other researchers that demonstrate it's the way we treat our residential. I mean, it's not just the fertilizing for residential lawns. It's also the weekly mowing from April to October that contributes pollutants into the air that precipitate and run off.
Okay. Thank you. Questions?
Yeah. So Ms. Strawn, according to this, what you're showing is that there's 340 townhomes as part of this 860-home proposed development. So what you're saying is that if the RED, which was potentially developed as 182 townhomes, was developed, that actually the RED by itself, 182 townhomes, is worse than all of the 340 townhomes plus everything else that's going there. Is that what you're asking me to believe?
That's the model.
So
that's how the model predicted. You can see the exhibit 2.
I'm just trying to understand the logic of that. So I understand the model, but is this an Excel model, Excel sheet?
Yes.
Can you please provide that to me?
Absolutely.
Thank you. So
the county, however, does have it because it's the same model the county used.
I understand. I just want to look at your numbers, but. So what you have in there, though, and this is something you heard me say a few minutes ago to somebody else, is you have 860 units in here, okay?
That's based on the current plan and that was given to us.
And just to make sure you understand, we actually have to do any of our stuff based off of what could be there under any potential development. And what this allows is whether it ends up being, as you know, a number of different housing types can be there. Mm-hmm. And so when you look at the various mix that they're putting in as well as the total number of units, at the end of the day, whichever ends up being the worst from this particular analysis and that particular mix and what you can get on there is really what we would have to look at if we were doing that analysis, not what they might put on, at some point in time. Because we even saw, even in the case of other properties, potential changes going back with the plans, and everything else. Whatever the zoning is allowed is what the zoning is allowed. But I would like to, if you could help me understand how mathematically, unless you're saying that paving is better than preservation area, if that's what you're telling us that we ought to be considering as we move forward with everything, because I can't figure out how mathematically 180 either small single-family home lots or 180 townhomes can be worse environmentally than 340 townhomes, 414 apartments, and 106 single-family homes. You got to help me there.
It really has to do with I'll step into the detail about how the model calculates this, how the calculations are done. First, we use the land use, land cover definitions from the Maryland State Planning. Then we use Howard County's zoning regulations with regard to what has to be an open space reserve based upon the zoning. And then what part is pervious and what part is impervious. Mm-hmm. So when you look at the large lot residential, you're getting a lot of pollutant runoff from that pervious area that is turf. When you look at the higher density of development, you're looking not at, there's much smaller component of turf, plus in order to meet the stormwater management requirements, you have to make the landscape effective for stormwater management.
And you're saying that under the RED, you wouldn't have to have those same requirements as it relates to development under the current regs as they exist today? And are you saying that the types of preservation area, when it would no longer be farmland, would not be to come wooded areas or other scaped areas as has been proposed as, you know, an alternative concept?
Are you taking
the worst case scenario attributes of each one?
No, in our when we modeled the RED, let me give you the assumptions for RED. So for we referred to Howard County Subdivision and Land Development Regulations to establish the residential parcels, which was considered the developed area, and the parcels reserved for open space based upon minimum open space requirements. So when we modeled the RED, we used that minimum lot size, which was 6,000 square feet, and connected to water and sewer, and the minimum open space requirements. And minimum open space requirements for all of the development we modeled as conservatively, as not pristine undeveloped areas, but instead what we call the active urban open space.
So basically you're saying it was a disadvantage to have 50% open space in this analysis. I just want to make sure I understand that.
I'm
trying to figure out if you're on 6,000 square feet of lot size, and that's what you're doing, and you've probably have to have some other assumptions in there for infrastructure and everything else.
Well, and each one of those lots also, and this is one of the key components of it, has a driveway and is served by a roadway, whereas in that more dense development, you're sharing driveways, you're sharing pavement, parking spots, and you're sharing rooftop.
But you're assuming in an RED townhouse development, and, you know, because it could be RED townhouse or it could be just like in the case of the RA-15, it doesn't all have to be that way. You're taking the best case of how it might be developed, not how it necessarily has to be developed, as well as the mix that might go there.
With the RED development, we just went with the zoning regulations.
I understand, but that's what I'm saying, though, is that if it doesn't have to be done as single family, it could be done as townhomes, and those townhomes could be developed very similarly to the way the townhomes would be developed in an RA-15 property. The only difference is actually the amount of open space that ends up being required at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. So if you're going through the numbers and the amount of parking or whatever, the amount of parking requirements at the end of the day is going to be very similar. But even if there's shared parking, your shared parking for 340 units isn't going to equate to being less than the parking requirements for 180 units. I'll look at the spreadsheet, and maybe it's just the ways they want this stuff to come out, and maybe it's the assumption on what ground cover becomes or stays, and maybe you're keeping it as farm cover versus, other just, wild open space and stuff like that becomes, like, around most of the surrounding communities, it just becomes trees and tall grasses that end up being more of a buffer to the watersheds than, any of the various options. But what you end up saying on this is we're having all this discussion over the problems of impervious surface, and at the end of the day, there's no way there's less impervious surface in this development versus an RED development. And it's even potentially becomes worse because the RA-15, you're sitting there with 860. I think you heard me say before, this property actually can take 1,365 by right and up to 2,250 units if density is brought in.
We were just given a plan to model, the current plan to model.
I understand that, but
we also can't model
an RED
subdivision in a different way because we had no plan for it.
I understand, so I guess that's my point is, it's not an apples-to-apples comparison, nor is it a requirement
Actually,
comparison.
It is, though, an apples-to-apples, because, look, we followed the Maryland Department of State Planning's land use, land cover definitions for each of the developments.
Right. So, see, under RE15, you could have done it a thousand different ways, because there's an infinite number of options and combinations of how that could have been developed, as far as in the number of apartments, number of townhomes, and number of single family homes. From our perspective, what we've been, our legal guidance that we've been given is whatever zoning cases that we're talking about, this or any other one, is based off of what could be there as we're looking at things. We can't look at covenants. We can't look at any other things like that. I'm pretty sure that was the guidance that we received the other day from the Office of Law, correct? And we don't have anybody from Office of Law, so I was looking around. I thought they were going to be here, so I just want to make sure I wasn't saying anything that was incorrect on that. The situation with on the RED is there's a couple of different ways even developed with an RED. There's a couple of different options, and whether it's end up being townhomes or single family homes, and I'm not sure which way even in this which option you modeled.
Dr. Ball,
I just want to make sure that I'm clear on what I'm looking at. So you have existing agricultural.
What page are you on?
I'm on page two.
Page two.
So you have existing agricultural use, and so this is pretty much comparable to the RRDEO that's currently on there. So if we kept RRDEO currently on there, according to this report, it would have the highest level of nitrogen and phosphorus and be...
And that's because it's on septic. And you can see that second bar for that scenario shows the red part of that bar shows septic contribution. The blue part shows the rest.
All right. So that's the RRDEO.
Just clarify on it. Mm-hmm. So, and that's, and what you're assuming there is whatever the one house that's on there currently, or whatever's on there currently is a home, and that's what the septic or whatever might be. And that the other loading from land use is from it being a farming application. So you're saying that the farming is bad and from a loading perspective, and that all the development is better?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I got that.
And then you have residential estate subdivision. What is that as far as like a zoning category? What does that mean?
That's what I thought I heard you say. That's actually the RRDEO. The first column.
That's the RRDEO.
Existing agricultural use is the current conditions as it exists today.
One home or two homes, whatever's on there.
That's
where we start. That's where the property is today.
All right.
Okay. Then where is it for if it stays zoned the way it is?
And then,
it doesn't stay the way it is.
And then the residential state subdivision, is that assuming the density exchange option? How many homes is that? It's
that's
32.
One dwelling unit on 3 acres. That's and also on septic.
One on three, so 30. So in between the what can be done without bringing density in and bringing density in. So right in the middle. Okay.
Right.
All right. Got it.
I'm clear now.
Yep.
Thank you.
And then do you have an option of if it was developed with that many units but being on septic?
On sewer?
I mean, being on well and septic, being on
water sewer. Yeah, that's why we displayed that bar that way. So you can see, you could just take off the red part, which is the septic contribution, and then you would see that it's relatively similar.
Okay, so basically what you're showing then as far as loading from land use is the land use loading ends up being what you're saying is the same, because at the end of the day, which whatever land's left over is what you're saying, and it's somehow the same amount of land will be left and not as much impervious surface under all three options. They happen to work out to be the same number.
Yes, and that's the scale of the model, which was intended to look at alternative land uses for the House Bill 1141 for the water resource element.
Mr. Erskine indicated you would not be available for our upcoming work session.
No, I will be.
Well, you will be.
Oh, I thought.
You mean the work session this evening, or you're talking about another work session?
You're talking about if we were to do this Friday, I thought we were under the impression you were not available Friday.
Well, so you're available Friday.
What time is the work session?
Two, three, or seven.
Four, whenever you want to come.
Yes. I can be available.
Okay.
Good.
Then we can continue
this. Because I'd like to digest this before
yeah.
I question.
Sure. Yeah, I thought you
that's
weren't.
That's why we were asking lots of questions.
Yeah, okay. But if you can get it tomorrow, you know,
I should look
early tomorrow
toward
to get
my
the,
client and make sure that that's appropriate.
But yes. I guess two things is, one, the Excel spreadsheet, and then the other is, and this would be you, it'd probably be your somebody from within your client group, is sort of a layout of what they're showing is assumptions of what type of development and coverage that was, how that was occurring, just very basic, because I'm having a hard time grasping how all of a sudden that it could, that the loading, especially with all the impervious surface discussion we've had, and how much would be required under these scenarios. I don't get how 340 townhomes as part of a larger group of townhomes is going to be better environmentally than 180.
So we can bring that information. I
know that's not you. That's probably going to be them.
I have provided you the spreadsheets, the printed spreadsheets in the appendix there, along with my resume, but I can bring you an electronic copy of that spreadsheet as well.
I, if possible, I'd actually like that sent prior, because that won't do a lot of good during the hearing. But so
sure.
Tomorrow morning would be great, or midday.
Would you like me to email it to
yes,
you?
Yes, please. To Ms. Tolliver.
Okay. I need an email address. Okay.
We'll make sure you get everything.
Mr. Erskine has it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank
and I hope
you.
Your leg's better.
Thank you.
Yes.
Correct.
Okay. Do we have anyone else who was signed up to testify but did not? Okay. So I think what we're going to do, folks, is conclude our public hearing and begin our work session. Is that?
The question is, do we want to do his work session or hearing as far as the questioning of Mr. Erskine? I almost prefer to remain as.
Oh, right. We did say we were going to bring him back up.
I'd actually prefer to do it as part of the public hearing.
I agree.
Okay.
Mr. Erskine. And then meanwhile, maybe we can.
I'm sorry, I don't.
They were for. Okay.
Well, we did have text. I mean, we did have text amendments on there, and folks were allowed to come up on projects and then on text amendments. So, if he testified on,
did you sign up for text amendments?
I did sign up for text amendments.
Then,
do you want to?
Do we want to get him up before?
Yeah, let's have him come
yes.
up before Mr. Erskine.
Yeah. Yeah, I see you on here.
Yep. Okay, come on up.
We're working through.
Yeah, we're just. Okay, so just state your name and address again for the record, even though we have that, which is...
Yes, it's John Taylor, 6528 Prestwick Drive in Highland. The concern I have, I was looking through the text amendments and saw that there's a new sentence under the RR district, and I believe the same sentence shows up, page 61 and 72, I think, that mandates in the rural zone, the RR and RC, a 10% moderate price dwelling unit requirement in any new development. And when you look at the actual implementation of that, you realize that means, and the amendment talks about multiplex housing, multifamily attached housing in the rural area. And that was always specifically disallowed. I mentioned a zoning case, ZB816, from March of 1986, where the Director of Planning and Zoning, I think his name was Tom Harris, specifically said that the rural conservation area, which is what RR and RC were in total called, it was the R zone, is not intended to provide a selection of housing. It's intended for rural conservation, limited development, environmental preservation, things of that sort. And that worries me because back in 1991, we had the Rural Residential Land Use Study Commission, which was developers, citizens, and so forth, that met for months on end. And they looked at, among other things, how would you implement clustering and how would you implement low and moderate income housing in the western end on well and septic. And believe me, these developers wanted this so bad they could taste it. And in the end, after they looked at all the things, well capacities, septic, shared septics, they couldn't make it work. It's 20 years later. The hydrogeology hasn't changed. It still won't work. Let me give you this idea. In a cluster development nowadays, a one-acre lot would sell for about $500,000, plus or minus. Some go more, some go less. So $500,000 for the dirt, for the building lot. This is why they build such great big houses out there. I live out there, and I see it. And there's these enormous houses, one right after the other now. I'm on 3 acres. And by the way, 3-acre zoning was originally done back in the 70s based on a 1971 groundwater study that said if you're going to do well in septic in the Piedmont area, you need 3 acres per house. So we're already using smaller lots by far than we should be for well and septic. Now, if you were to put a $500,000 lot and say, we're going to put multifamily attached housing on this and we're going to make it affordable, the median income is $105,692, so figure about $80,000, and your Council Bill 34 includes low-income housing in that definition, so maybe it's even lower than that. How are we going to make this $500,000 lot plus structure affordable to people on moderate incomes? You're going to have to put quite a few dwelling units, which means you're kind of talking apartments. Where are they going to put all their cars? Are you going to have a one-acre parking lot with an apartment building in the midst of a rural cluster of multimillion-dollar homes? You're way out in the middle of nowhere. These people are going to have to drive at $4 a gallon to get anywhere. I live out there. I have to drive a half hour to get anywhere. All I'm saying, and I know I'm running out of time, is the developers looked at this 20 years ago and couldn't make it work. You've got statements in these text amendments that mandate it. It's not permissive language. It's mandatory. Take that out and go study it. I'm not trying to bury it by I'm saying go study it and convince yourselves and the rest of us that you can make it work before you put a mandated requirement in the zoning regs.
Thank you. Questions, Mr. Fox?
I just want to make sure I've got you. So you're talking about mostly the RRRC multiplex?
Yeah.
And I know one of the things the council as a whole, along with our state delegation, as well as our administration, as it related to some of the septic concerns, I think the administration had put a kibosh on the shared septics, and then the state delegation, along with the council, I want to say it was unanimous, had concerns regarding and put the end on the multi-use if it was residentially owned. And part of that, and I'm not saying where I'm standing on this, but part of you know, that concern is what we saw at Cattail and some other places is it relies around residential. Right. The question, though, becomes, you know, in something like this, is if it's not individually owned, it's a business owned, how does that differ? Similar to, you know, we don't have that restriction on, you know, businesses that are out there, and we have to have the businesses that are out there, but the thought there is if somebody wants to, you know, buy that business, they'll be able to go in, they're going to address that septic. It's not a situation of dealing with a larger community on the business side. So I definitely hear what you're saying. I'm not sure the right answer. As far as if they're individually residential, it can't be done.
But it's a residential zone. Are you talking about putting a business in a housing cluster?
I
think we could talk about this further.
We'll talk about the work session.
I am noting his concerns specifically about septic.
Septic, which we too. But the septic has been our bigger one that we've been dealing with out there,
and rightfully so, I might add.
So I suggest we put this on the work session.
Right, yeah, I agree.
Because Council Bills 34 and 35 are already on the work session, and I think Mr. Carbo is going to.
Yeah, they're on the work session at 4:30. Right.
Okay.
Well, we're going to talk about it. And I think we, beyond Mr. Carbo, we do need to talk to planning and zoning and our septic.
But I just want to be clear. So you're talking about two different things. You're talking about the multiplexes and you're talking about the MIHU requirement, both?
I'm talking about both because they're inexorably linked. When you're on well and septic, you can't do one without the other. It just economically you can't make it. I don't think you can make it economically work in any event. But if you don't go to multiplex housing, you can't, given the land costs.
No, part of it, they have an option to
do. Are you aware that there is
They have an option. They have a fee in lieu of. There's a fee, right?
I didn't find the fee. I was looking
at it. Yeah, there's a fee in lieu of. So
it's in the bill that we have before us.
The multiplex is a different concern that may be more of one that has nothing to do with the MIHUs.
It's where it shows up, though. In the MIHU statement, it's right in there.
To a certain extent, they are, but it's...
We are going to talk about this.
Yes.
We've got some work to do on this.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Erskine's up. Okay, now go ahead and, well, I guess you've already stated your name and address for the record. You're back up.
Yes, thank you.
Okay, where were we? Do we have questions for Ms. Zucker?
You had mentioned the schools, and that's actually something, you know, Ms. McLaughlin had mentioned to me as well. And the question is, how many times can the same schools be used for the properties that are around the area before now other people are having to be redistricted and moved out? We're at the point for most of the schools that are there, capacity or no capacity, regardless, that the way they are zoned to address both a combination of capacity issues is that, for the most part, very few people are now going to those schools that are west of the schools. There's only, especially as it relates to the high school. And there was even at one point one of the proposals that was given by the school board, and I'll have to look it up as far as which school it was, actually redistricted as one of the options, redistricted part of Maple Lawn out of one of those schools there. So continuing to point to the same schools to be used over and over and over again is a concern. Another requirement that was in the page 73 or 70, whichever version that you're looking at, was providing, and give me a second here, is to... And enhances surrounding communities. I don't think we've heard from anybody in the community that anything here is enhancing the community from the community members. So I'm not seeing how that is doing it in any way, shape or form. That would be helpful to understand. I think obviously you heard some of my concerns regarding your analysis that you had done regarding the impact on the environment. I think that's a tough one for anybody to look at and look at the logic of those numbers, although I'm willing to go through the spreadsheet cell by cell and try to understand it. And then another thing that we're, to a certain extent we look at it, especially on something that's this large of a parcel, is the financial impact to the community. And on something this large, especially on what can be there, not just what's being proposed to be there, I have concerns as it relates to how this will impact the county financially. And let's see what else. And you had a number of discussions as far as, RE15 versus, RED. It's still something that, whether it's RED, could also even stay RR and potentially be developed that way.
I don't mind you doing that, but then we should all be discussing if you have questions for him.
I'm good.
We're not in work session.
No.
Okay.
No, we're just... asking Mr. Erskine some questions about finishing up the testimony in the hearing.
So go ahead. If you have questions, that's fine.
I don't have any more questions.
I have no questions at this time.
I think I'm good for right now.
We have a lot of information to digest.
Okay. So you don't need a response to those concerns then?
I would more be prepared at the work session to have them, and that's part of what I want to make sure of as well.
So is your intent for us to have that discussion not after this?
No.
I'm concerned. I think we just got this study.
Yeah.
We just got this study. I don't have the I'd like to get the Excel sheet. I'd like to understand some more.
Right. And Friday.
I would also like to be able to give the Maple Lawn people a time when we're going to discuss their business, so they're not waiting here for 5 hours until we get to it.
I concur.
Would you like to start with that then?
I wouldn't, because I think it's too early, and I think a lot of our other stuff could be done.
What did we start? We're starting at 2.
If we did at 4:30? We took a break around 4:15, and then did that at 4:30.
That sounds good.
Yeah, I think
we'll
so.
We'll be very efficient between 2 and 4.
We greatly appreciate
that. So we're going to do it at what time?
4:30.
4:30.
And we'll take a break at 4.
Does that also work for you, Mr. Erskine?
I'll make myself available.
Yes.
Dr. All right. Tolliver, if you could write that down for us, thank you. Okay, so we're going to...
Now, Mr. Johnson,
Well, because we were going to have more of a... We're going to have some of a work session.
Fine. And we're still going to be talking about a couple other things that people may want to...
So my understanding is that we're talking about some of the legal issues. We're going to close the hearing and have a work session, which everybody's... It's a public work session. You can stay here, and we're going to be discussing things with... legal issues with Mr. Johnson, which may include Maple Lawn.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay?
Yep.
Okay, so hearings. Okay.
Yep.